Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, emuhle, Africa, omhle, the beautiful African. Dumela. Good day, good evening, Tobela, Malweni, Ashe, Hotep, Sava, Assalamu Alaikum. Africa, the African Union meeting place. In fact, let me apologize, Africa, for the late start of the program. I hope that it will go through because it looks like there is no sound from my side. But I will continue nevertheless. The African Union meeting place, Africa, at the Gallagher Estate in Sandton, South Africa, a place that has nothing to do with the liberation struggle, except that the leaders were given houses and migrated to the area away from the townships. You ask, after 20 years of independence, why government has not built its own AU meeting place in Soweto, Sharpeville, Langa, or Robben Island? More than likely, in Africa, they are planning to do that, but 20 years' time is time that has passed down the bridge. And like, for example, it looks like anyone else who has no currency, no capital, holding meetings in places like McDonald's, Burger King, whatever, and it's the place, government does not own the place. Somebody else owns the place, and the name of the place has nothing to do with the liberation struggle. We are talking about continuity, culture, cultural identity, and also reinforcing in the children's perception that we've got a place here and they can connect the place with the liberation struggle. Africa, we have seen the banks, the company headquarters, and everybody migrating to the area before and after independence. And it might be precisely the reason why the first subway was built to connect the place directly from the airport. And its namesake, it used to be called Shilowa Express, is almost extinct from the political scene because of factional fightings and all that. So it appears that on our side, there's no continuity in Africa. We just are doing like headless chickens, responding to events. Why in the world, Africa, when these things were planned, Africa were opposing the new political compromise and dispensation, perished, Africa. Many of our people perished. The others were removed in car accidents, poisoning, mysterious death, and it all went on and on. So the heartache, the concern is that on our part, there's no continuity. I mean, we are fighting today like cats and dogs over leadership, sometimes not more than 1%. You have a following of not more than 1%, and you're still fighting for leadership. And others, as I say, that this sake, Shilowa Express, is almost distinct, has disappeared from the political scene because of the infighting. So the question is, Africa, where and how far are we going? Because we've been pointing this issue of political factionalism in the past programs. And it has serious consequences, Africa. But that being the case, Judge Hans Fabricius of the High Court in Pretoria in South Africa issued an order, Africa, that His Excellency President Omar al-Bashir should not leave South Africa until a final order is given on 11:30 Monday morning to issue a warrant for his arrest on the orders of the International Criminal Court for the outstanding indictment, or let him go. So you ask yourself questions, Africa. In the first place, why did we sign the International Criminal Court as an individual country? Why did African countries sign the charter, the International Court, Criminal Court Charter, as individual countries? Did they sit down and have a consensus, take a vote as to whether they are going to vote or not? And I remember, Mafika, it came immediately after. It came after the decapitation of apartheid. Now, none of these courts in Europe and America attempted to charge apartheid for the crimes of apartheid. And on the contrary, even my Africa, who took the task to charge apartheid and initiate the case in, like for example, the Federal Court of the United States, it is the governing party, the then president, who wrote the court saying that, no, don't do that. We've taken care of reparations. Now, the charge was to charge the apartheid monopolies for crimes against apartheid and that they should pay reparations for that. And the governing party, the president of the governing party, and the president of the country then said, no, don't. But at the same time, remember we had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that forgave apartheid agents who put our people on fire, the young activists, the one young liberationists, the revolutionaries, were staked on fire, killed and murdered. And the apartheid agents were to be forgiven if they confessed those murders and the killings. If they fully confessed their murders, they would be forgiven. And those who refused were never prosecuted. And this is according to advice and pressure from the black government. That said, no, don't prosecute these people. Because the fear was that if they prosecuted them, then the government would have to prosecute members of the liberation movement. Now, how do you equate the two? And we mentioned this in the past programs. So the prosecutor, ex-prosecutor, wrote an affidavit with the fact that he was fired for pushing to prosecute the apartheid agents that did not confess. Now, the question is with President Bashir. What if the court issues the warrant of arrest on Monday? And the fact is that no matter, because government has given him, government can give him immunity. And according to the AU, the appeal is for African countries to withdraw from the ICC, withdraw their signature from the ICC as membership of the ICC, International Criminal Court. But the question is that, did they anticipate that one of the NGOs or some of the non-governmental organizations, some of the people, will go to court and demand the court to issue a warrant arrest against President Bashir? Did the governing party anticipate that? Or did they put the ICC on warning that, look, we intend to withdraw our participation, membership to the ICC, simply because we are calling in, we've invited Bashir, and we don't recognize the indictments against him. So Monday morning, come Monday morning, the judge might say, okay, I'm issuing the arrest for the President Bashir. What's going to happen then? The question, my Africa, is that the governing party is losing support. And it has a disrepute, right, this reputation of flaunting the law and the courts and the judicial system. Like, for example, we pointed out that we have senior members of the National Prosecuting Authority who are facing fraud charges for defending a corrupt cop. But we've had recently the director of the National Prosecuting Authority resign because there were differences. He more than likely was pushing too hard to prosecute the corruption charges against the sitting president. So the government may defy the ruling of the court. But the question is, what does it do in the country? Because we cannot be always reacting. What does it do to the constituency? Recently, we've had a situation where an event where the Student Representative Council in Forte. Now, Forte was the alma mater for Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, Oliver Tambo, Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, Robert Mugabe, Nyati Pokela, all these stalwarts in the liberation movement went to Forte. And in fact, Sobukwe, as we pointed out, was the president of the Student Representative Council. So there is a movement already against the away, especially among the born free, away from the governing party. Now, if you are seen to protect someone that allegedly has committed genocide against other Africans, do you really think that these children are going to follow you? And the question is, why not take a proactive stance and declare that, look, we are inviting President Bashir and we are withdrawing our membership to the ICC? So that you don't get caught up in a situation where you appear like you want to be on both sides. We need clarity of movement here. Like, for example, we've been calling for the AU to establish the Pan-African Court that will resolve disputes and crimes between and within states, between states in particular. Now, an issue like the crimes against humanity or the charges that were laid against President Bashir or any other African president should go before the Pan-African Court. Unfortunately, as of last week, I believe, the AU initiated establishing an ad hoc court in Senegal that would try ex-president of Chad, President Hissène, who ruled between 1982 and 1990. And it is simply because the International Criminal Court in 2012 ordered Senegal, because Senegal had given President Hissène the refugee. I mean, he was a refugee in there. The ICC ordered Senegal to put him on trial or extradite him to face justice in Belgium, where the charges were laid by three victims. We are saying, Africa, why don't the African AU establish a Pan-African Court that will have precedence before and above the ICC? So that if there's a charge or allegation against the African president, we handle that thing internally. But the Pan-African Court will also handle disputes and crises, like, for example, in Burundi, where you find that the Constitutional Court took a decision supporting the president to run for the third term. The Constitutional Court had seven judges. As we speak today, four have absconded. They've left the country. More than likely, they did take the decision under pressure, and three are left. Now, in this case, the Pan-African Court comes in to resolve the issue rather than having meetings of regional presidents and whatnot, persuasive and voluntary. No, we are tired of that because it takes time, it takes money, and people are dying. Why don't establish a court, Pan-African Court? The decisions are taken, the decisions are binding, and we move forward. The same thing with Southern Sudan. It has been going on and on. The conflict has been going on between the leaders because each one does not want to accede or compromise. so that the Pan-African court, you put them in front of the Pan-African court, the court decides, whoever wins, wins, whoever loses, loses, and either or maybe it tells the two, no, step down, we need new leadership. That's it. So Africa, we seemingly are moving in circles. And the problem also is that the AU is not accountable to the ordinary Africans. Yes, it is a structure up there. They make decisions on their own between states. Fine. But we are saying that even some of the governments who are there are undemocratic. And some steal and stole elections. So there is no accountability there. And we are raising these issues because if we don't raise these issues, we are going to have problems. Now, the African Rapid Response Force may be established soon, maybe by the end of this year, to deal with conflicts in Africa. But still, Africa, you cannot send a force every time military solution without the fundamental rule of law. Like the suggestion maybe would be that once you have the Pan-African Court, you have the African Rapid Response Force. The force responds to decisions and resolutions, conflict resolutions, by the court. They must be underpinned by the Pan-African Court ruling. In fact, should enforce the court ruling after due process. So that's the position where we are, Africa. And the AU, of course, it dedicated this meeting to women empowerment, this session to women empowerment. Good. And it had a special guest, I think, who Angelina Jolie, who addressed one of the fora. But we are saying, Africa, that our policy is the individual, Africa, not groupings. And if we strengthen judicial system, independent judicial system, we don't want interference in there. And you establish accountability in terms of proper governance, accountable governance. The policy, my Africa policy, is that you take care of the individual. Because if we begin to deal with women, you have to deal with children. You have to deal with the handicapped. You have to deal with the albinos who have to be protected because in terms of that one has to be done immediately. But segments, no. We deal with the individual because we know that irrespective of gender, man or woman, and you can provide more empowerment to women. But as we say, that the principle is 50-50. So, yes, women empowerment, but the fundamental rights for the individual, Africa, that is policy. We are saying that, like, for example, we have across Africa, the individual, Africa, or my Africa, do not have security of the sovereign rights and fundamental freedoms and space to live and grow. And we can simply ask Africa, what is your current condition? Because we see it. Wednesday, June 16, Africa, we remember and commemorate, celebrate and thank the liberation generation of 1976. All my Africa who spearheaded and made the supreme sacrifice before, on the day of June 16 and after to this moment. And we give homage to Africa. We also commemorate and thank the generations of the individual Africa and Africa collectively. All generations of Africa. Centuries and decades of the liberation struggle and resistance against slavery, colonialism, apartheid, since the Portuguese invasion of 1st March 1510 and after arrival 150 years after of Jan van Riebeck in 6 April 1652. Now, the Portuguese came in 1510, and Jan van Riebeck, the Dutch, came in 1652.
That's when our problem started. That's when the war of resistance started. But we have won, Mafike. Since that time, it has been on and on and on until the students rose up, ultimately, the ultimate watershed, and squashed the whole thing. Like Mangaliso Robugu said that Sharpeville took away the fear to resist past wars. But 1976, when the enemy shot, it took away the fear of the gun, and it encouraged the children to go take the gun and shoot back. And that's what exactly what happened. So June 16, 2015 is 39 years. We'll be 39 years after June 16, 1976. And it is 52 years after 25 May 1963 founding day of the Organization of African Unity and the Liberation Committee that was tasked to liberate Africa from colonial and apartheid occupation. Africa, land is supreme, and more Africa, the person, the human being, is superlative. And land, Africa, is static and everlasting as a resource. We found it here, we are living it here. But also, Africa, it is the human mind and body that harnesses and develops the land, add value to the resource, produce, create work, wealth, health, all from the land resource, all from the land, Africa. Like, for example, thinking about health, major pharmaceutical cures are rooted and extracted from natural herbs on land, most likely stolen from the indigenous people. Always, as the case, my friend. It is the human life, the quality of life, and securing the individual, more African security, to health, to life, to be free, again, as you say that, be free to grow and develop to the fullest human potential, which is the key, my African, to develop land. To develop the seas, to develop the skies, to develop space. That's why we insist, Africa, that Africa should start with rights. Yes, you can build tall buildings, you can build railways, you can build this. We are going to still be screwed up. Because those policies are about the commodity. The commodity, chasing commodity, chasing money, and most of the time, like we are holding an AU meeting at a place that we don't own. Africans don't own. Galanga Estate. We know what approach is. You're going to build those railways with folks that are not an African. And we have major Africans here, especially when we speak in the diaspora, especially in the Americas, with a lot of experience. So we are going to have, again, other foreign extractions to come and run. And that's what is happening. You talk about the e-building, the ETOs, building this in South Africa, building this power stations. What is happening is that we are being milked, legalized theft. Huge projects are the quickest way to make money. And since they have agreeable blacks that they can co-opt, they just want to take one. Sometimes they take somebody in the street. Say, come here, sign here that we have a black person. And the next thing is they get a contract to build a highway. That's how it's been done. So we are saying that government must formulate its policies from among the people. All right. All the laws must be rooted in the individual Africa. And also we are talking about establishing a socialist economy and establishing an Africanist government that puts more Africa first and the people collectively as a nation first. Like, for example, in Africa, we have coal, copper, cobalt, water, yes, geothermal steam, even in South Africa. But Emalahleni, the place of coal, in Africa, the lights are cut off simply because the executive failed to service and maintain electric power supply stations, distribution networks, yet they gave themselves bonuses. They paid themselves hefty bonuses. And for 10, 15, 20 years, Mafrika, there was no repairs. There was no maintenance. It was just eat, eat, eat. To a point where they failed to remove ash from the boilers, failed to fix coal silos. So, Mafrika, these are mistakes that were set up. In the late Mafrika, Shangulashu, the land is ours. We apologize for the late start and the because it appears that the system was not working as I know it usually works. But thanks for the privilege of talking to you, and thanks for the privilege for the opportunity of listening. Thank you, Mafrika.